The valiant and vulnerable prophet Elijah. Episode 8. The giant despair. Number one, pace. Number two, poison. Number three, pain. Number four, peace. He was called the Prince of Preachers, brilliant in mind, authoritative in speech, fervent in spirit, vivid in imagination, persuasive in argument, able to hold a 10,000 strong congregation without a microphone for over an hour, and they would be spellbound. He was a poet, a hymn writer, an author, an extraordinary Bible teacher, a soul winner, a prayer warrior. He pastored a church. He founded and taught in a Bible college. He set up a children's home. He edited a magazine and could process 8 thoughts all at once. His name was Charles Haddon Spurgeon. He was called the Prince of Preachers, but he often had a fight with his own fog. This is what he said. I've often wanted to take my own life. I could have easily laid violent hands upon myself to escape such misery of spirit. This is what else he wrote. My spirit is so low, so often I could weep on the hour, by the hour, as a child. He battled with the blues. It is estimated that 1 in 6 people in our country struggle with some sort of mental illness. In a congregation this size, there'll be quite a number of folk here who've battled with depression. Next to the Bible, Charles Haddon Spurgeon loved Pilgrim's Progress. And he knew exactly how Christian and hopeful felt when in the clutches of giant despair and his ugly wife diffidence, there in Doubting Castle, in the lowest of dungeons, feeling as if everything is about to end, not just physically battered, but emotionally and psychologically distraught and in despair. Churchill called it his fight with the black dog. Scott Fitzgerald said it's the 3 o'clock in the morning experience, cold, dark, lonely. The dark night of the soul, it's been called. C.S. Lewis, the times when your emotions weigh a ton, when it's always winter, but never Christmas. A good title could be the title of H.G. Wells's book, Mind at the End of Its Tether. I don't need to ask, I know. Some of you have been there. Some of you are there tonight. Some people say, of course, well, Christians don't struggle with depression. That's a lie. When Abraham, the friend of God, could struggle, when Job, the most perfect man that ever lived, according to God, could struggle, when Moses, the man who brought the Ten Commandments down from the Mount, could struggle. When Jeremiah, the prophet, could be called the weeping prophet. When David, the man after God's own heart, could cry out, how long, how long, how long, how much is a man supposed to take? When Paul wrestled with despair. And when Elijah, the prophet of power, could say, I've had enough. I want to die. Enough is enough. Of course, some of you, some of us, might hide our depression quite well. Depression is a private thing that even friends can't share. No matter how much they want to help, no matter how much they want to care. Depression is a lonely thing. It beckons you apart, surrounded by a happy crowd. But depression has your heart. Depression is a human thing that people cannot shun, from beggars to majestic kings. It can come to anyone. It comes to the prophet of power, the valiant prophet Elijah, who is the vulnerable prophet Elijah. We take it up with pace, real pace. Chapter 18 and verse 46. And the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he gathered up his garments and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. What a picture of pace is this. Elijah is like an Olympian. He will run between 16 and 18 miles, outrunning the chariot of Ahab. This is something supernatural. The hand of the Lord is upon him. It's astonishing. Can you picture the scene? Mount Carmel has happened now. Now the rain is falling. The ground is being saturated. It's not just a thunderstorm, it's a monsoon. Elijah is very much the man of the moment. He has been telling the king what to do, when to eat, where to go. You better get your chariot and go back and tell Jezebel. And now here he is, running. And can you picture the scene as Ahab's on his chariot and all of a sudden this hairy beast starts running? His arms and legs are like pistons. He's overtaking them. The adrenaline in Elijah, this sense of the supernatural is upon him. After all, the fire has fallen. After all, the altar has fallen. After all, the people have fallen. The Lord, he is God. After all, the Baals have gone. The priests of Baal have gone. And now the rain is pouring down. And he has been the central figure in all of this. The hand of God has been upon him. Perhaps now as he pelts towards at pace Jezreel, in his mind he thinks, Ahab will fall and Jezebel, that demonic high priestess, she will fall. Here he is running at pace and the hand of the Lord was upon him. But I wonder, is he running in the right direction? It's a very good question. The commentators are divided. Did God say to him, go to Jezreel? You see, the hand of God had always been on Elijah. 3.5 years before, as he'd marched in to the palace of Ahab, when he declared with boldness, there will be no more rain for 3 years and 6 months. The hand of the Lord had been upon him when he stayed in the Ravens Hotel and was fed by ravens. The hand of the Lord was upon him in Zarephath with the widow. The hand of the Lord was upon him when he raised the widow's son. The hand of the Lord was upon him when he came back and confronted Ahab again. The hand of the Lord was upon him there on Mount Carmel. And the hand of the Lord was upon him when that small cloud became a thicker cloud, a darker cloud, and then the rain began to pour. He may be running, but I wonder if he's running in the right direction. Jonathan Jarvis is sitting on the back row here. Many years ago, his father invited me to go and speak at a mission in the church in Kent. I had an old Cortina Mark I, not the most reliable of cars. I was a little bit late for the first meeting, though I'd started off very early in the morning, because on the M25, the car broke down. I was panicking. Actually, the Lord undertook. There was such a traffic jam. By the side of me in the traffic jam was a man in an AA car. He must have felt sorry for me. He came out, he looked at me, he said, your car's running on empty. Very often, there are men and women, even men and women of God, who are running apace, but running on empty. Never forget, activity is not spirituality. You can have time for meetings and occasions and events and no time for your soul and no time for personal intercession, communion with the living God. And sometimes we can do things thinking the hand of the Lord is upon us. But are we running in the right direction? Are we doing the right things? After pace comes poison. Because we're confronted with Jezebel's temper and Jezebel's tongue. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Jezebel, the fire came, the altar fell, the people fell, the prophets of Baal have been slain. The people are shouting, the Lord, he is God. Your prophets have been killed. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he is the living God. Look what happens next. You have to read between the lines to see her temper and feel the lash of her tongue and see the deep psychological as well as spiritual warfare that now is about to go on. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah. Now that's unusual. Jezebel, you've been murdering the prophets. Why aren't you sending one of your assassins? Why don't you get someone with a bow and arrow or a spear or a sword or a knife? Why are you sending a messenger? And say this, so may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. Poison. a messenger is sent, can always, hey, Elijah, you should have seen the rage she was in. Should have seen the display of bad temper there was. Should have heard her tongue. The threat. She'll have you. If it's the last thing she does, she'll have you. Wow. Send that message. Make sure he hears it. You know, the Bible says the power of life and death is in the tongue. Some people are proud of the fact that they can reduce someone to that size by their tongue. Some people's tongues are sharper than any blade, deadlier than any bullet. She's in a rage. I'll have him. If it's the last thing I do. And I'll call upon all the satanic power that I have. And this deep psychological as well as spiritual and satanic warfare begins to take place. There is poison in the woman. There is poison in her mind. There is poison in her heart. There is poison on her tongue. Everybody in history knows the story of Jezebel. Everybody does. It's not something new. It's not novel. You all know it. She engages in this spiritual and psychological warfare. And it has its desired effect. Because number three, this is about pain. Look what happens. Verse 3. That he was afraid. And he rose and ran for his life. And came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. Suddenly, this man is gripped with a pain so deep that eventually he's going to cry out to God, I've had enough. I want to die. I can't go on. This is ridiculous. Here he is in blind panic, in the grip of terror, in the grip of fear. His mind is being tortured. It's almost as if he's a man in mourning. Can you believe this is Elijah? Come on, Elijah. You're a man who lives in the atmosphere of miracles. Come on, Elijah. You've just been on the mount. The fire's fallen. The rain's fallen. The people are declaring the Lord, he is God. Stand up to her. Be afraid of nothing but sin. But no, this man is tortured and terrified. And it's almost as if he's declaring the death of his own soul. Where's God now? I thought Jezebel would bow. I thought Jezebel would repent. I thought there would be a real change. There isn't. There is an unholy defiance. And here is a man saying, Lord, are you really there? Are you really in control? Here's a man now terribly disappointed with God. Can you believe it? After all these miracles, he's now disappointed with God. His joy has been murdered by despair. He enters the grey world. The terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day world. Look at that. He's so afraid, he runs for his life. 95 miles to Beersheba. Then there'll be another 40 days later on. A man on the run. And look, he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He's in the wilderness now. Arid, stark, at nice freezing cold. And the day burning hot. He's sitting under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." Enough, Lord. Too much. I can't take any more. Not another day, not another hour, not another minute, not another second. I've had enough. You know, there are those who are experts in these fields. They tell us about the brain under stress and under pressure. They tell us that it catastrophizes. You catastrophize everything. Everything is an absolute catastrophe. Then you analyze and analyze and analyze and analyze until you're paralyzed. I know the paralysis of analysis. So your brain's going over and over and over and over and over again on the same things. Then you personalize it. That's what Elijah, I'm no good. I'm as bad as my fathers. I've not done anything ever any good. You personalize it. It's internalized. You're about to implode, never mind explode. And then you polarize. It goes to great extremes. Wow. Enough. Take my life away. My joy has been murdered. I'm disappointed with God. What's more, he sends his servant away. So now he's socially isolated. He's all alone. Disappointed with God, utterly lonely, in the depths of despair, wanting to end his own life. That's pain. Listen, friends. You can break your leg, break your arm, fall off your bike, hurt your ribs, bash your head. Some of you know. You can be looking perfectly fit and be in absolute mental torment. Anguish of mind and heart and soul. Ever been there? Some of you are nodding. You're there tonight? You say, "I've never been there." I wouldn't say that if I was you. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? Who knows what will tip you over? Pain. Lastly, and we're going to finish this off next week, I want us to look at peace as the gentle healer begins his work. God gently, tenderly, graciously begins to work upon Elijah. Look what happens. First of all, there's tender assurance. How do we know that? And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. God gave him sleep. What a beautiful gift is sleep. Some of us who don't sleep very much, you know, God gave him rest. How gentle is our God. And then look what it says. And an angel touched him. I can't help but think of Fanny J. Crosby. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Do you remember that? Angels descending. bringing from above, echoes of mercy, whispers of love. Hey, listen, can I ask you this? Have you ever been visited by an angel? You know, perhaps you're thinking of some bright, shining creature with some wings. Perhaps it's a human being who's come along. There's many a time an angel has touched my life. And this angel comes with practical care. It's food. He sleeps. He eats. He sleeps. He eats. The gentle healer comes with tender assurance, rest, an angel, practical care. He, you see, will be in Horeb, in Sinai. I mean, how far has he gone? Eventually, he's going to have this gentle voice giving this gentle speech. You can't miss next week's thrilling installment, I'll tell you this. Because look, by the time you get to verse 11, go and stand on the mount before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And a voice came to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Tender, gracious whisper of God to his soul. Beautiful. More about that next week. Take these lessons home. Perhaps you're struggling. Remember that depression follows mountaintop experiences very often. You are at your most vulnerable when you think you're being at your most useful. Beware of the post-blessing blues, some of you young people came back from camp on a high, high, high for the next few days. And it's not long before you're hit by a low, low, low. At the mountaintop experiences, very often, the enemy of our souls will come. Depression can follow times of real stress and hyperactivity. Of course it can. Depression can coincide with emotional exhaustion. This man's emotionally and physically exhausted. Depression can come after a sense of disappointment. Perhaps you're disappointed in someone or something, or disillusioned with someone or something. Depression can come after anger, which is not being dealt with. Depression can come even to dedicated Christians, even to prophets of God, we're most vulnerable to satanic attacks when we're physically and psychologically exhausted. So number two, beware of burnout, where you become dysfunctional. Number three, get some help. Go to your doctor. If Spurgeon had been living today, he'd been on medication. Perhaps he'd been have a period in the hospital. Get some help. If you need medication, get it. If you need a holiday, take it. Get some help. But for tonight, would you try to be still? And allow God to whisper to your soul. Not in the wind, not in the earthquake, not in the fire, in the still, small voice? Would you allow one of his angels to minister to you? Will you get some rest? Take some food? Look after your body? Would you listen to Jesus? I never forget an older man, Betty Rivers isn't here tonight, it was her husband, bulging eyes, large frame, would cry like that. Standing up, admitting he was struggling, but then asking for the chorus, "Burdens are lifted at Calvary, for Jesus is very near." Remember what the writer to the Hebrews wrote? "Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." Draw near to God. He will draw near to you. And then next week we will see, God willing, how this divine and gentle healer begins to restore his prophet's soul. He can restore your soul. Let him. Allow him. Draw near to God. And he will draw near to you. Let's stand and sing.